Hello, hello. Welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
Yeah, Christine.
Why did I say it like that?
I don't know.
Continue. Just go ahead. You're Christy. Okay. You're my mom.
I'm Christy. I'm your mom.
And we're going to be covering Sherlock Season 3, Episode 3, His Last Bow, which is the season finale.
It is the season finale, and we are excited to be sharing this with you. We have our usual caveats, which include that there will be cursing, there will be spoilers. I mean, seriously, people, if you've not been watching Sherlock up through Season 3, why? Season 3 is, like, amazing. Mm-hmm. And we are having things to drink. What are you having to drink, Natalie?
I'm having lemon lime Gatorade. I would like to argue that there is also a fruit punch variety of Gatorade. I'm not having it, but there is one. And so punch comes into play.
Yeah, punch comes into play. And that's why I'm having what at least appears to be an apple punch for Appledore. So, hey. And it's also kind of an apple cider-y punch.
Yeah. That
comes into play in this episode. So we are looking forward to getting started. Let's get started.
All right. So Charles Augustus Magnuson, I'll reveal that later. He's a newspaper man, and he is being interrogated by a council from the government.
He's played by a Skarsgård, because you have to have a Skarsgård in every series of some kind.
It's true. He's being interrogated about his influence over the prime minister, and he's just like, no, I don't. Don't worry about it. I just visit a lot. Don't worry about it. And what he does, and I had mentioned this before, he finds people's pressure points and exploits them. And he seems to have a vault in his home full of records on various people that he can use against them. He uses the records of a predatory affair, a 15-year-old girl, via letters, a woman named Lady Smallwood, who is on the council.
I just want to point out that how they are doing this visually is it looks like he has like a computer screen that he's
like searching. Tony Stark glasses.
Yeah, it's like he has Tony Stark glasses. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. So he wants to get blackmail on Lady Smallwood, who is leading the investigation. And he finds that her pressure point is her husband. And her husband had a predatory affair with a 15-year-old via letters. He met her like once before the letters began, and he apparently didn't know her age. And once he found out his age, according to Lady Smallwood, he stopped. But still, it's incriminating. And so he mentions, or he like corners her in like a library of some kind.
This is creepy.
It's so creepy. He mentions her perfume is Claire de la Lune, that's a great classical piece of music that I really enjoy. Anyway, he licks her face. It's so gross. Like, also, that's like gross for him too.
Yeah, I mean, he's holding her hand, and she keeps saying, "Don't touch me. Take your hands off me." And then he licks her, and he's like, it never tastes the same as it smells, does it? It's like, ugh.
He's a creepy ass man.
But again, it's a Skarsgård kind of thing. They do creepy well.
Yeah. She goes to Baker Street. And then we cut to about a month later. John is getting PTSD dreams and Mrs. Danger and hasn't seen Sherlock in a month. Him and Mary's neighbor's son is a druggie and didn't come home last night. And their neighbor, Kate, is really worried about him. And so John decides that he's going to be neighborly, but he really just wants a dose of danger. And so he's going to go to the crack den that they are presumably at. And he's going to get the son back to his mother.
And he has a tire iron. As a weapon stuck in his pants. And Mary's kind of like, yeah, I'm going with you. And she's like, you can't, you're pregnant. She's like, yeah, I can.
You can't go. I'm pregnant. And also, she is so funny about it. It's like, why are you holding a tire iron? And they get to the the crack house, and they're parked outside, and he like gets the tire lever that they call it, and she's just like, "What? Why are you? What is that for?" And he's just like, "I don't know. Maybe one of them needs help with a tire." And then she is just like, "Hey, John, it is a tiny bit sexy, just a little bit sexy." And he's like, "Yeah, I know."
I know.
He goes into the crack house, and there's basically like a bouncer at the crack house. His name is Wiggins. I'm just gonna call him Wiggins. His name is Bill Wiggins. And he is trying to like get John to go away, but John just sprains his arm. And so
like, "You broke my arm." "No, it's just a sprain. I'm a doctor." "I know how to sprain people."
And so John finds the son, Isaac, and he's just like, "Have you come for me?" And he's just like, "Do you think I know that many people here?" And they laugh about it. And then Sherlock turns over in one of the mattresses and is just like, "Oh, hey, John, are you here for me too?"
And John's like,
Isaac goes to Mary's car, and he's just like, "Can I get in, please? They're having a fight." And she's like, "Who is?" And it's just Sherlock and John arguing, and Sherlock is saying that I'm undercover, and then John says, "No, you're not." And Sherlock says, "Well, I'm not now." It's so funny.
It is. And they go and get in the car, and then Wiggins jumps in the car too. It's like, "He hurt me."
I have a sprained arm. He doesn't say who it is, actually. Right. He's not a snitch.
They end up at Bart's with Molly.
Mm-hmm. And Molly does a drug test on Sherlock, and he is far beyond clean. Mm-hmm. And she slaps him several times in the face.
Good for her.
And he's just like, "Well, sorry that your engagement's over, but I'm really happy for the lack of a ring."
And she is like, "No, you are wasting this gift you've been given." The tweaker, which is Wiggins, picks up on some of the things that John has on him, because obviously Sherlock is talking about, "Oh, you started riding a bike to work." And John's like, "No, we're not going to get off on me. We're going to like focus on what you're doing being high." And Wiggins like starts deducing things about John too, and John's kind of like, "Fucking stop it.
Please stop."
But he's actually fairly decent at it, and Sherlock's kind of like, "Oh, you're not bad at this." And he's like, "I can be, you know, you're second in command." He's like, "No." Sherlock then gets a text that his drug habit is going to be in the paper, and he seems very happy about this, which seems a little weird. They meet Mycroft at Baker Street because, of course,
I'd like to say that when they get to Baker Street, he knows that Mycroft is there because he straightens the knocker, and Sherlock's like, "He's OCD. He doesn't even know that he's doing it." And then he makes it crooked again. And then John's like, "What?" And he's like, "What?"
And you
it's
make
such it, a sibling thing to do. OCD. It's just like, "You straighten my shit out, I'm going to make it a mess again." It's so funny. But Mycroft has the fan club searching for drugs at the apartment.
And Anderson, we've seen Anderson searching for drugs in the apartment numerous times, and it just seems like, hey, that's the thing to do. But yeah. Anderson and the fan club are up there. And Sherlock's just kind of very antsy about anyone going to his bedroom.
Right.
So he doesn't want anyone to go in the bedroom. Mycroft goes toward the bedroom, and Sherlock just talks him out of it, and talks about their parents, and he says that their parents are line dancing in Oklahoma. So Sherlock also tells Mycroft that he's working on a case against Magnuson for Lady Smallwood, and Mycroft says that's going to set them up to get arrested, because he will have to be going against Mycroft. If he goes against Magnuson, he's going against Mycroft, because Mycroft is protecting Magnuson.
Well, he's under his thumb anyway.
Right. So John tells Mycroft to leave. Sherlock wants to recruit John into this thing involving Magnuson. And they find out that there is a girl in the bedroom. And it is
Janine.
Yes, it is Janine.
This is some of the funniest shit I have ever seen. John reacting to Sherlock having a girl over is so fucking funny to me. And it being Janine, who was his wife's maid of honor, is yes. so funny. Like, she literally comes in and she's only dressed in one of Sherlock's shirts, and she's like, oh, hi John, sorry, not dressed. And there she's walking around, and she, like, clearly they are an established couple of some kind, because yeah. She has like nicknames for everybody. Like, he's just like, oh, was it Mike? And he's like, what, Mycroft? They're always fighting. And she has moved around like coffee cups and teacups and like mugs in the apartment, and she's clearly made her mark.
She refers to Sherlock as Sherl.
It's so funny. And John cannot handle that. It is so funny. Mm-hmm. And Sherlock by this point has like gone to have a bath or whatever, and so mm-hmm. she goes in and joins him, and John just has to listen to them giggle. It's so funny. And John is just so confused.
He is.
Anyway,
he's mightily confused.
So Sherlock, it, when he comes back out and he's dressed and all that stuff, he talks to John about Magnus, and he's very focused on that, while John is so focused on the fact that he even has a girlfriend. And there's this one line of when Janine comes out and she like sits on Sherlock's lap or whatever, or on the side of his chair. She's like, I haven't told Mary about this. I wanted to surprise her. And then John's like, yeah, you probably will.
Yeah, it's gonna happen.
And Sherlock tells John after Janine leaves, after that she's been flirting and they've been like cute together, Sherlock tells John that Magnuson is the Napoleon of blackmail and has a file on basically everyone in his vault called Appledore. And John is so focused on how they might have dinner with them as a double date, because Janine in passing is like, we should all get dinner sometime. And then John's just like, dinner, we're having dinner. And then Sherlock's like, I have just told you that somebody has files on basically everybody and has control over everyone in like the Western Hemisphere, and you're really just focused on having dinner. Like, why is this your focus right now? It's just funny.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Magnuson shows up at 221 Baker Street with a security detail. And they talk about how Sherlock is working for Lady Smallwood. And he talks about how he enjoys her, like she's the only British person with any balls. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the letters with Sherlock. He says that... he says the word Redbeard in this mm-hmm. conversation. Magnuson basically, he's just so aggressively full of himself. He makes Sherlock look like he's not. So he makes his mark by peeing in the fireplace.
Disgusting.
He says that everyone in the UK is spineless. He's not going to hand over the letters, although he makes it clear that he has them on his person. And then he and his posse leave. He's just like, yeah, I'm not going to be negotiating with you. Sherlock wants to go out and do things about this. And so he tells John not to bring his gun, that they're going to go to the news building that night. And Sherlock, they do. They meet up at the building that is owned by Magnuson. This whole time, John's just confused. He's like, why are we here? What are we doing? Mm-hmm. They get into the building because it's after hours. Sherlock goes up to the elevator that goes to Magnuson's office and has this whole plan about how he's going to get in there. And you know how there's going to be security and what the security fail-safes are going to do. And he's like, and this is how we are going to get around all of them. Because there's going to be a camera right at eye level. I'm going to press the button. I'm going to use the key card. I'm going to press the button. And my face is going to show up. And his PA will answer. Magnuson's PA will answer. And it's, of course, Janine. And what mm-hmm. he does is he proposes marriage to Janine.
Let me just put it in perspective. John hasn't seen Sherlock in a month. So that's presuming that Sherlock, after leaving the wedding... Sherlock, he hasn't seen Sherlock since the wedding. So it's been a month of perhaps dating Janine, and he's going to propose, but she still lets him up there. I mean,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, she's like,
oh, she probably know. Wants to talk to him about it, being like, why?
Well, but she seems very excited. She lets him into the elevator. They go up in the elevator. And by the time they get up in the elevator, she's not in sight anymore. And there are guards down, and she has been knocked out as well. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of poking around trying to figure out what's going on. And Sherlock realizes that Magnuson's desk chair is still warm. So whoever the intruder was, the one that got there before them, whoever that person was, is still in the office. It's like an office apartment. It's like this two-story.
It's thing. A penthouse, yeah. I will say the one thing that's not really explained is how the intruder got in before them. Mm. Like, were there stairs? Like, I'm confused about how this person got in.
There's a trust situation going on with Janine there too, though.
No, I'm not saying there isn't, but why wouldn't, if the intruder got there first, why didn't they knock her out already?
Mm.
Anyway, it's just a weird thing.
Yeah,
anyway,
no, I agree. There is a hole there for sure.
There is a hole there. Anyway, so Sherlock also smells the perfume Clair de la Lune, which John offhandedly is like, that's Mary's perfume, and he's just like, no, it's not Mary. Oh, it's Lady Smallwood. That's what he's assuming. And so he goes up the stairs to go find Magnuson and Lady Smallwood, presumably. And when he goes upstairs, I don't know why they ended up in that room that they did, but sure. Dramatic effect. But yeah. He goes in and he sees Magnuson on his knees, basically begging for his life, while a person dressed in black, basically like a burglar outfit, holds a gun to his head. And basically Sherlock's trying to talk down Lady Smallwood, or who he's thinking is Lady Smallwood. But when the person turns around, it is actually Mary.
Yes.
And he's in shock. Sherlock did not see this shit coming. And so when we go back kind of to all the deductions he had previously made about her, and one of them actually was liar. And that right. one replaces all the other ones. And so it becomes the dominant deduction of like, she's lying. We don't know who she is. Why is she here? Oh my God, what is going on?
And she, first thing she asks is John here? Is John?
And Sherlock says yes.
And she's like, fuck.
Yeah. So what happens is that Sherlock is trying to reason with Mary, and she's just like, whatever he's got on you, I can help you. And he tries to step towards Mary, and Mary's like, if you take one more step, I will kill you. And Sherlock is just like, I don't think you will, because you're not going to do this to me. And
you're not
going to
do it to John too, is part of thinking.
So he takes another step forward, and she does end up shooting him in the chest.
Yes. And then we go into what happens when Sherlock is in these situations is he runs through his mind palace. And what's happening there is that Molly is talking to him about, this is what happens when a person gets shot. What's going to kill you? It's going to be blood loss. So we need to figure out, do you go forward or backward? I mean, first there's a discussion about what kind of gun it is.
But that's not really relevant.
Yeah, Mike Croft kind of jumps in and is like, it doesn't matter what kind of gun it is. The question is forward or backward. Like, okay, forward or backward.
Bullet is still in them, yeah.
Right. So they're gonna use the bullet much like they used the belt in the delayed action thing with the bloody guardsmen. They use the bullet to stop the bullet or
slow blood, throw. The blood flow.
And so he falls backward. He's going down in his mind palace, he's going down the stairs, and he turns into a little child.
Oh, well, there is another thing of he's going into shock as well. And Molly's just like, you're going into shock. It's the next thing that's going to kill you. And Sherlock's like, what do I do? And then Mycroft just goes, don't go into shock, obviously.
Right.
Even and in his mind palace, Mycroft is such a dick.
Well, right. It's just, you've got to calm down. The east wind is coming. This is what Mycroft's saying to him. And so what will make you calm? And what makes him calm down is Redbeard, we find out, is his childhood dog. It's an Irish setter. And then it's like, the pain's going to kill you. And it's like, all right, what do we do about pain? It's like, because if you're not in shock, you're actually feeling the pain. So the adrenaline isn't protecting you under those circumstances. And so he goes all the way down to where Moriarty is, you know, in his insane asylum padded cell, telling him basically, this is what life is. It's pain, it's broken heart, it's loss, it's death. And, you know, that's all good. All of these negatives are good. And we cut back to Magnuson saying to Mary that you're not.
Mary.
Oh, I'm sorry. Magnuson says something about doesn't help John.
Well, John comes in and he finds Sherlock unconscious with a bullet hole in him, and he is freaking out. And Magnuson comes to. He had been knocked out by Mary before she left, and John's just like, "Who shot him?" And Magnuson doesn't tell him because he can hold it over him in the future. Right. And there's also. Moriarty in a a straitjacket, just keep taunting Sherlock this entire time about just like because John calls an ambulance and an ambulance does eventually come, and Sherlock is flatlining at the hospital, and Moriarty is just taunting him about like, just do it already, just die. These
you can join
cry.
Me.
Mycroft will cry, Mrs. Hudson will cry, the woman will cry. I love that they keep bringing up the woman. It's so funny to me. Yeah. The woman will cry and John will cry. Buckets. Oh, that wife. Oh, you're really letting him down, Sherlock. John Watson's definitely in danger. And Sherlock finds the will to live and pulls through because he needs to keep John safe. And Sherlock's first word when he woke up was Mary, which John tells Mary, and Mary kind of freaks out a bit. So Mary goes to Sherlock's hospital room, and he's just coming back from all the morphine and drugs and such and surgery. And she tells Sherlock not to tell John while we see Magnuson looking at her file in Appledore. So that next morning, Janine shows up and she basically sold a kiss and tell story about her and Sherlock. There was one called "He Made Me Wear the Hat," which is hilarious to me.
Yeah, these headlines are super funny.
So, so funny.
And flash up so quickly, it's hard to write them all down.
Yeah, and she, but that was the one that stuck out. She's like, I'm going to buy a cottage and you made me a lot of money, mister, because you used me and I kind of used you too, but that's not the point. And he's just like, well, did you give it to Magnuson's paper? And she's like, of course I didn't. I gave it to rival newspapers who paid more. And so she's going to buy a cottage and she is going to be able to live her life peacefully. And he's just like, well, whenever we're married. And she's like, that was never going to happen. Which we kind of suspected anyway, but yeah, it's kind of bittersweet the way it's just like, well, we were both using each other and now our use is at an end, so what are we gonna do now? And she says, well, we could have been friends if you hadn't lied to me. And I think that is true. I think they could have been friends, but well, you kind of used her completely. Anyway, Sherlock tries to figure out in his mind palace, figure out who Mary is and why she did what she did. Then later that night, John and Lestrade find Sherlock missing from the hospital and try to figure out where he is. They go to different people like Molly and Mycroft, and Mary goes to the fan club, which no one else thought of, which is kind of bizarre to me, but
yeah,
Either way, and so Sherlock, well, sorry, John is at the apartment and he's trying to figure piece everything together, trying to figure out why Sherlock would not tell them who shot him because he was facing the shooter, like he should know. And since Sherlock is so smart, he could be able to deduce a lot of things about the person even if he didn't know them personally.
Right.
So John is starting to think that Sherlock is saving, is protecting somebody, but who would he want to protect is the question. And
So
he.
part of what happens though is while John is sitting there in 221B, he's like, "Why is my chair back?" And he starts to look around the apartment, and he realizes like there's a bottle of Clair de Lune on the side table. And he starts to figure out this has something to do with Mary. And
Yeah, and Sherlock also calls John, which is
right.
also helpful.
Right. He tells him, and he says, come to, he tells him basically, you need to come to like Leinster Gardens or Leinster Gardens. That's his
So Mary.
bolt hole. That's the one that actually, for whatever reason, Anderson knew about.
Yeah, so because he stalked him one day.
Yeah.
But Mary goes to the spot the fan club mentioned, and Wiggins gives her a phone, and she's just like, "Oh, so you're working for Sherlock now?" And he's like, "Keeps me off the streets," and he's like playing a beggar on the streets, and
Yeah.
she's just like, "Well, no, it doesn't, but okay." And so she puts in her Bluetooth headphone, like, okay, or Bluetooth like earpiece or whatever, and so Sherlock talks to her. And he basically won this facade of a home on at a bet or whatever at poker, and it was basically hollowed out for the train system to run underneath it. And so Mary goes inside and she sees a figure in the shadows with like an IV drip, and he has the coat on, so it's like, well, that's Sherlock. And so they're talking, and it's revealed that Mary stole a dead stillborn child's identity, which is why she doesn't have friends before the date that the stillborn child died. And she also is able to recognize a skip code. She has a great memory. There are a lot of elements that Sherlock has now noticed that would be helpful in whatever kind of occupation she has, like an assassin, perhaps.
Because she's
And
a very good shot.
yes, and Sherlock basically tells her, "I'll take the case." And it's at this point that he reveals, "Oh, that was a dummy. Like it wasn't really him." He actually comes out and talks to her, and she's like, "Oh, dummy, fairly obvious trick." And he's like, "Why didn't you come to talk to me sooner? Like I could have helped you with this case." And she's just like, "Because it would kill John, and I don't want that to happen. That's the last thing I want." And then Sherlock turns on the light on the other side of the room, and it wasn't a dummy, it was John. And so now he knows that something's up with his wife.
Yeah,
And
because part of what happens in this tunnel is that he asks her, how great of a shot are you? And she shoots like into a coin into the ceiling, and it's a perfect shot. And he's like, yeah, you are too good of a shooter. If you wanted to kill me, you would have. You were conducting surgeries, the way he describes it. You weren't killing me. You were precisely trying to get me out of the way so that you could handle this situation with Magnuson. And so he's like, I'll take the case. And so they go back to 221 Baker Street, and John's furious. I mean, he's just like,
there is a flash forward, but we can do it in chronological order. That might be a little bit easier.
okay, go ahead.
Well, no, that you keep going because that's the chronological order.
Right. So they go back to 221 Baker Street. John is like really, really upset. And he realizes, and he's fighting with Sherlock about it, because Sherlock is like, they're about to have a domestic, because Mrs. Hudson's asking. He's like, they're about to have a domestic, but they need to hurry up about it because I'm going to bleed out. And I've got this bad thing going on. And he finally tells John, what is she? What is she? And John doesn't want to do it. And he finally sets up the chair and says that she's a client.
Well, there's also a line of John is just questioning everything in his life. He's like, is everyone I've ever met a psychopath? And Sherlock's just like, yes, now that we've gotten that out of the way. he tries to move on, and John's like, no, we're not making light of this. This is fucked up. What the hell? But yeah, they end up treating Mary like a client. And then Mary takes out this flash drive that has the letters AGRA, Agra, mm-hmm. on it. And she says that they're her initials, which, unless you have two middle names, no.
And sometimes you have a confirmation name that you use, but
I don't use that as
an initial.
Either way, she essentially is like, all of my past is on that flash drive, but do not read it in front of me because you're not going to love me when you're done, essentially, to John. And she, it's revealed Sherlock knows that she just incapacitated Sherlock and knocked Magnuson out to prevent John from being a murder suspect, because if she killed Magnuson, they had just broken in, so they would be the top suspects,
right?
And it's revealed that she was the one who called the ambulance after she shot him, and John's ambulance wouldn't have arrived until much later, and Sherlock would probably be dead. And yep. Sherlock's actually already called an ambulance right now because he's bleeding internally and he's been away from the hospital for too long, and he starts going into shock again a bit, and he tells John to trust Mary, and John's like, she shot you, and Sherlock's like, mixed messages, I grant you. it's very funny. And so there is a flash forward that's kind of interwoven with these flashbacks to Christmas in Oklahoma with Sherlock and Mycroft's parents.
It's Oklahoma. I think it's England. I don't think they live in Oklahoma. I think they were visiting Oklahoma.
No, they live in Oklahoma, Mom. They were visiting England.
Don't think that's right. I think they were visiting London.
Sherlock literally says that they're in Oklahoma.
Right. They are in Oklahoma because they're on vacation, like doing line.
But Magnuson doesn't live in England.
I don't think he lives in the U.S. Because all
where he lives.
All the police that arrive, all that stuff, it seems very England. So anyway, proceed.
I don't fucking know where they are. Christmas at the parents' house, some fucking place. Anyway, so everyone is there, including Mycroft, Sherlock, Mary, John, and Wiggins is also randomly there. So Mary, yeah, I guess it would make sense that it's not in Oklahoma, but they never explain where the fuck they are, so I'm not going to take that as a loss. Anyway, Mary bonds with Sherlock's dad, who's the normal person, because his wife is extremely smart, and that's probably where his children got that kind of gene, because he's a self-proclaimed moron, but he loves her anyway because she's incredibly hot. Anyway,
very cute.
So John asked for a moment with Mary, and they're finally having conversation today. It's been months since they've really talked about anything, because I can't blame them. And so he brings out the flash drive that she gave them, and he reveals that he did not look at it at all. He throws it in the fire, and he says, the problems of your past are your business. The problems of your future are my privilege. And she's just like, you don't even know my name. And he's like, is Mary Watson good enough for you? And she's like, yes, it is. And so they make up, which is very sweet.
Yes.
It's a really, really sweet moment. And it shows that they do have a really strong relationship. Anyway, Mycroft and Sherlock are having their Christmas smoke, and they talk about a job offer that Mycroft would like him to decline, because Mycroft deduces that it would be putting Sherlock back in the field, and he deduces that in 6 months Sherlock would die. And Mycroft is rarely wrong, and Mycroft says, your loss would break my heart. And Sherlock like chokes on the smoke, and he's just like, what the hell am I supposed to say to that? It's really funny. So Wiggins, it's revealed that Wiggins drugged everybody, their tea or their punch or whatever. So the only people conscious are John and Sherlock. And essentially what there's another flashback to Magnuson meeting with Sherlock, who wants to see Appledore and thinks the glasses that Magnuson wears are the portable version of Appledore, but he's wrong. They're just regular glasses. And so basically he wants information in exchange for basically his brother. It's his brother's laptop, but either way, it sounds cooler when you say, oh, my brother. Anyway, a helicopter shows up to take them to Appledore, and John's kind of like, but it's Christmas. And Sherlock's like, I feel the same. Oh, you mean it's actually Christmas? Yeah, I know, but this is so much cooler. And so they go to the house and they find out that Magnuson was the one who put John in the fire, because Sherlock's pressure point is John and Mycroft's pressure point is Sherlock. And whoever has control over Mycroft controls everything. And also John's Mary's pressure point, and Mary's pressure point is Mary is John's pressure point as well. So everyone's getting pressure pointed all at the wazoo. Anyway, Sherlock will exchange the laptop's password for any material on Mary that Magnuson has in his possession. Yes.
I want to correct myself. It's Lars Mikkelsen. He's not a Skarsgård.
Okay.
Proceed.
Anyway, so Magnuson knows that the laptop has GPS and Mycroft will find them with backup. So he's just kind of biding his time, and Magnuson basically reveals, well, you've clearly made a terrible mistake, which will ruin everything. But that's why I'm smiling. So fuck you. And so it's revealed that Appledore isn't real. It's just a mind palace technique. And there's a line really quick. John says, I don't understand. And of course, Charles Magnuson says, you should put that on a t-shirt. Very Mary. Yeah. Also, really quickly about Mary, we figured out after a few watches that this isn't new information to us, but Cam is Charles Augustus Magnuson's initials. So he was sending her a threatening note basically on her wedding day. Yes. Anyway, Magnuson essentially says that he doesn't even need any concrete proof. It's all memory techniques about things he's seen before. He doesn't need concrete proof because he's a newspaper guy. He can just write it. He just prints it, and that becomes the truth.
And even at that point, John says again, I don't understand. It's like, and there's the back of the t-shirt.
I still don't understand. And there's the back of the t-shirt.
Yes. Yes. Magnuson is basically taunting Sherlock and taunting John. He's like, I'm gonna just, destroy your whole lives. You see how easy this is for me? And the police start to invade the property, and there's a helicopter that comes in, and the police are basically trying to protect Magnuson. Mycroft's in the helicopter. He uses the sound system to say, oh, they've got to get away from him. And Sherlock just turns to Magnuson and shoots him in the head.
First he says, oh, do your research. I'm not a hero. I'm a high-functioning sociopath. Merry Christmas. And then shoots him in the head.
Which is kind of heroic in the moment. He's, of course, arrested.
Well, yeah, he did just kill a man in front of all of the police.
Yes, exactly. Mycroft then has to make a deal, and he meets with Michael A. Dean or whomever he's supposed to be portraying.
And Lady Smallwood.
And Lady Smallwood. And he's like, look, we need him. I know he's an asshole, but we need him. And so they decide that they are going to send him to this Eastern European thing that he'd originally not intended to send Sherlock to, because he's going to die if he goes there for very long. They go to a plane that Sherlock's going to get on the plane and go to.
You missed a very important line that basically is the entirety of the next season. Mycroft is talking about how they need him, all that stuff, like you said. And then this isn't an outburst of brotherly affection. You know what happened to the other one. So apparently there was another sibling.
Yes, well,
That's
or
funny.
the other person, and the other person who was in this situation. I don't think it's nearly as clear that it's a sibling in these circumstances, but that's okay. So they go to where the plane is, and they're going to be putting Sherlock on the plane. Sherlock wants to talk to John, and basically he's just giving him his name as a baby name, and he's like, "Oh, it's a girl's name."
It's a mirror of like John giving his name as a baby name for
Yeah,
him and the
exactly.
woman.
And Mycroft says the East Wind seeks out the unworthy and plucks them from the earth. And in 6 months, I may die. So this is basically goodbye. He gets on the plane. The plane takes off, and then like every TV in the country are all taken over by someone saying, "Did you miss me? Did you miss me?" And it is
Andrew Scott, Moriarty.
yay. And Mycroft calls Sherlock, and Sherlock's like, "Make up your mind. What's going on here?"
I've
He's
only
like,
been gone 4 minutes.
"I've only been gone 4 minutes." He's like, and Mycroft says, "An east wind is coming." And that is the end of the
Well,
episode.
John
And
says that.
oh, John. Yeah, okay. And that is the end of the episode and the end of the season. What were your best parts?
The Mary twist, I think it was well constructed as far as like there being seeds planted, and she was a little too okay with the craziness that is their life for her to not be kind of weird.
Yeah.
And there is a whole conversation with John and Mary when they get back to the flat after the reveal to John that it's basically like Sherlock being like, she's like this because you chose her. You were attracted to dangerous people. Like, is it that much of a shock that you chose somebody this crazy and this like assassinate, like an assassin who was, and Sherlock further
You're a dangerous
pierces.
person too. You are.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's something. And then the whole Christmas section of like them at the house and John and Mary making up, and Sherlock and Mycroft's talk is very funny, and learning a little bit more about their parents is fun too. Sherlock and John in general, I think that they, again, they're always great, but I really like them in this episode with Sherlock giving John a reality check while John is in denial about the fact that he is attracted to danger. And he's just like, you couldn't live in the suburbs for a month until you went storming into a crack den. So I think that that's a sign that you have an attraction to danger that you cannot stop or help. And John's reaction to Janine and Sherlock is hilarious to me. I think that his entire like focus being on not the like villain of the week, it's focused on the fact that Sherlock even has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And also Andrew Scott. I love that Andrew Scott is here.
Yeah, I mean that is certainly a twist that is thought-provoking. And of course, it provokes thoughts, and then you have 2 years to wait, which,
Yeah, that was annoying.
that is really annoying. My best parts, I love the intersecting stories. I feel like they did a really good job of having all of these storylines that had started even at the beginning of the season kind of come together. I love the writing. I love Mary and just the backstory and how that fits in with Magnuson and with everything else. I love Molly in this, and I love Janine in this. I think
I do
this is
love
a
Molly in this as well, yeah.
it's a fun episode for the female characters for sure. But
She
that's all.
slaps him so many times in this scene, in this
And we all
episode.
do.
Absolutely.
And she gets to do it. So there we go. What were your worst parts?
Magnuson peeing and licking people. Like, what
Yeah.
the fuck is wrong with you? And also there's a moment where he flicks John in the face
Oh yeah.
constantly, and he reveals that he did that to Janine once. And I'm just like,
Yeah.
why? She's
Because
your
he's a creep.
PA, dude.
He's a creep. I mean, he's a sadistic creep. That's what he is. And he's dead now. Yay.
Yeah. And I think that's why Lady Smallwood there, when Mycroft is saying the punishment for Sherlock being going on the job, she's just like, that you're being hardly being merciful, because she really did not want to deal with that man ever again. So I can't blame her.
Yeah, no,
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can blame her. But yeah, what were your worst parts?
I just said them.
Oh, you did. I'm sorry. Mine was that the ending dragged a little bit. I felt like I like, that last thing with Moriarty, but I just felt like
The goodbyes were a
the
little
goodbye,
overdrawn.
like, oh, it's a baby name. I mean, it's like the pacing again just kind of drops off, and you're thinking, I kind of want this to be done right now. And then all of a sudden it's not done, and you're like, it just is not as rewarding as I'd like for it to be, and I think that it should be. But that was my complaint with that. What grade did you give this episode?
A minus.
I gave it an A minus also. It was like A slash A minus, but I gave it
Yeah.
more of an A minus. And I don't know exactly why,
I
other than
don't know why either. I'm trying to figure it out because I think I love more moments from the first episode of the season than compared to this one. However, I think that this one also has a lot of rewarding moments with the Mary twist and
right.
with, I think it's just a rich story. There's like the first episode was trying to like clean up loose ends and like reconnect characters and like do all that stuff, which is stuff that the audience is going to love. It's basically just like a lot of
Fan service.
fun. Yeah, it's fan service. But then for this one, it's just like building up from the beginning of the season, and it does give you the payoff of the full season, kind of like the way that season two did, but in a different way. I just think that, I don't know, I think it might be Magnuson. I think he's really creepy, and I think they did that well. And I think the actor's great. I feel like he could have been more of a reoccurring person, or he could have just done a little bit more to directly influence Sherlock. I think that it was lacking. Obviously, like this shows how much Sherlock cares about John, Mary, and all that stuff, but it's really more of a problem for Mary than anybody else.
Well, and for Mycroft.
And for Mycroft, but I feel like they didn't build up how Mike, like they do mention in passing that Mycroft is under Magnuson's thumb, and Mycroft even tells Sherlock that if you go against Magnuson, you're going against me, that kind of thing. But I feel like they don't build it up quite enough for me.
They don't say why.
Yeah, they don't say why he feels indebted to this man or like under the thumb of this man. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me why, but yeah, I think that might be part of it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that I like Magnuson as a bad guy, like an overarching bad guy, but he's not got the sex appeal of Moriarty.
He
You know
doesn't,
what I mean? He doesn't. I mean,
and no
and
one
he's not
will.
meant to. He's meant to be
Just
this
creepy.
Iceman. Yeah, he is. It's kind of like the Iceman and the Virgin thing, like in the Mycroft Sherlock dynamic,
Yeah.
where there's a sex element to Sherlock. There's a sex element to Moriarty, and there's like none of that with Magnuson.
Well, no, it's just creep.
Yeah, he's just this intellectual person, and he's so devoid of
Emotion.
emotion and his own pressure points. I mean, you don't really see that he has,
Any vulnerabilities?
well, because he doesn't care about anything. He doesn't even care about himself. I mean, he's like a nihilist. It's creepy. So yeah.
He just cares about business, and that's it.
Blech. Anyway, so that's pretty much it. So season to season.
Well, also within this season, I feel like we should also rank the episodes within this season because we've done that for the past two ones. So I think it's clearly The Sign of Three is our favorite.
Yes.
And then I think Empty Hearth is just more entertaining to me than this one. I enjoy this one a lot, but I think I like Empty Hearth better. So I would go Sign of Three, Empty Hearth, and then whatever this one's called.
His last vow.
Last vow.
You know, it is a really tough call between Empty Hearst and Last Vow for me. They are very, very, you know, I do like humor, obviously. Like, you know, that's part of the reason that Sign of Three is, you know, like the best part of this season. But I think there's humor in this too.
Oh, there is.
And I do like the Mary reveal. That's kind of fun. Not fun. It's a little sad.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
I'm thinking about it, and I, you know, they're really pretty even to me. I don't know if I can pick one over the other.
You can say they're tied for you.
I say they're tied. And that's what I'm saying. So
okay.
Season to season, I would say that season three outstrips the other two.
I agree.
It would be season three, season two, season one for me.
I agree with that. And the thing is, and I do love Sign of Three, I think that there are maybe some higher highs sometimes within the Moriarty plot that I appreciate more just because I love Moriarty and Andrew Scott and all that stuff. But there is, again, like I said in the first episode of this season, that there is just a consistency of quality in season three and an ongoing, like, pretty concrete storyline. I don't know if it's more or less serialized, I'm trying to remember, but it's certainly more of a complete story, and it follows like the different stages of a relationship in a way, because we meet Mary, they get engaged, we see their marriage in episode two, episode three they're having a baby and they're having marriage problems, so we get to, that's an ongoing thing. We have Magnuson as an ongoing villain in the background for basically all three of these, except for he's briefly mentioned in the second episode. But I like that there is a consistency there. I do also like the kind of way that they did seasons one and two, where they're just doing like little mysteries here and there of just general stuff. And I think that's why I like A Sign of Three so much, because we get to see other mysteries.
True.
Which, again, I think that's why, but I don't know. I really like the consistency of season three. I love the characters that are introduced. Well, I love Mary.
I think that there's more of an overall arc to season three that we didn't see in seasons one and two. And I think that that makes a difference when you're looking at it as a season of a show. I do think that, you know, all the things that made season three good, all those seeds were planted in the first two seasons, certainly. Mm-hmm. And they do use that information, which I appreciate that. It's not like, you know, it's not so episodic that you can't get some sense of continuity.
Right.
So I really feel like it's a well-constructed show, and I like what they've done with it up to this point, but we still have season four, and I haven't watched season four in a long time.
And also we have a Abominable Bride.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do.
In between them.
Yes, we do. I'd forgotten that it's in between. I kind of like lumped it into the next season, but it really isn't, is it?
No, it's segue in between the two.
So it's fun. And Abominable Bride is definitely fun.
It's definitely fun, yeah.
Yeah. So looking forward, actually, to that, because that's next.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that you join us. And
cheers.
Cheers.